Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, the final episode in our Learning for Sustainability podcast series. I'm Conor Galvin, and it's wonderful to have you here with us. In this series, we shine a light on the work emerging from the European Commission's working group on schools dealing with learning for sustainability. Each episode brings forward ideas and experiences from the work of the group that can help us rethink what learning looks like in this very, very fast-changing world. So today we're focusing on a topic that's gaining attention across Europe increasingly: citizenship, education and sustainability. So this is not just about teaching young people how society works. It's about equipping them to participate actively, to think critically and to help shape a fair, inclusive and sustainable future. And joining me for this conversation, I'm very pleased to say, are two good colleagues, friends of the working group, and long-established experts and practitioners in this area, Marie-José Neves from Portugal and Elaine Nevin, who's joining us from Ireland. You're both very, very welcome. Can we go straight to the money question, the first one? Let's begin by setting the broader context. And can I ask you, please, Marie-José, to do that? You've actually worked extensively on this whole area of democratic engagement and student agency in Portugal. So can I ask you to sort of say a little bit about how you see citizenship education contributing to sustainability learning and why you think this is important? Thanks.
If we want to participate democratically, we cannot expect that only the governments and policymakers will decide by us. We must be engaged. Otherwise, how can we solve problems that are connected to our lives, to everyday life, and to other, including thinking on the other as a person that I could be in another situation? It's a question of empathy as well, and a sense of belonging to this humanitarian community.
Yeah, I think all of that is so profoundly important. Thank you very much for bringing it to the surface. I think the emphasis on participation and this notion of empathy is something that really helps us frame the rest of the discussion for today. So if I can turn to you, please, Elaine. Now, you've got extensive experience working in what's called the civil society area, more so than formal education. But can I ask you to say a little bit about what happens when programs intentionally bring your kind of programs, the sort of programs you run, bring citizenship and sustainability together? What sort of magic can we expect or can we see?
Yeah, and thank you, Conor. And as you said, I suppose I've been working in the field of, more the non-formal side of education and that civic society piece and that citizenship education. So what we've been doing, I suppose, is seeing education in action, really, and bringing young people, supporting them to take action. So what we would see is when you bring citizenship and sustainability together, I think something really interesting happens. Some of these bigger, maybe environmental and sustainability issues. So take, for example, climate change, which of course is a global issue, which can, I think, often feel very overwhelming for people, and something maybe that's a bit out there. And I think something that you learn about. And I think when you bring the citizenship and sustainability together, I think what you get then is that young people, they learn about all of the, climate change and these issues related to sustainability, but then they actually bring it back home and they see it much more in, I suppose, a personal perspective, or they see it from a social or a political perspective. And then they feel that they can actually do something about it. And we see that in EcoUNESCO a lot. I suppose what we would see is that it often moves from that awareness piece to action, as I said, so young people can feel just much more empowered and much more a feeling that they can actually do something about it, and that developing that sense of agency in young people. And I think that's really, really important. And we'd see that a lot in the different programs that we run. So we'd have a few after school program, like our Youth for Sustainable Development or our Young Environmentalist Awards program, and they would encourage young people to take action on these issues. And you really do get this sense when they develop that, you know, the awareness of these issues, but then the confidence to take action and the skills that they need. You know, it could be, for example, learning how to talk to local councillors. A lot of the work we do, you know, we will do work in schools, and we bring the programs to the schools, but we encourage them to look at the schools as being part of, I suppose, a community. And within that community, how do you basically, as young people, how do you learn how to look further than your school? What is the political reality, political systems that you're actually in? And how can you kind of understand those political systems as well? And how can you maybe affect those political systems, or how can you make change in some way? So it's about how to talk, you know, to your local councillors, how to do collective action projects as well, and how to take collective action. And I think that when you combine all of that together, you get a real sense of, I suppose, confidence building in young people, and they're feeling that they can actually do something. And I think that is hugely powerful as well.
That's very, very, thank you. Wonderful insights there. And as I say, you know, it comes off the back of your experience in EcoUNESCO. Elaine, can I turn to you and ask you, you know, in a sense, your work often highlights the conditions that help young people build that sort of confidence that Marie-José has been talking about, and build that sort of active engagement that Marie-José has been talking about. So, you know, what if I had to kind of put you on a hard question, you know, what helps learners actually develop that confidence and skills in a very practical sense, you know, so that they can take part in the democratic process and become involved in at least considering collective action?
Yeah, and I think, I suppose it is just interesting, as you said, Connor, what Marie-José has said and how much of this crossover between the non-formal and the formal side, I suppose, in the education side. But certainly what we've seen over the years working with young people, and as well, we have a lot of experience in that, as you said, that whole area, developing confidence in young people. What I see and what we see through our work is that where young people feel that they have, I suppose, I think a genuine voice, where they feel that they are being listened to. And I think, as you mentioned, where, you know, it's not tokenistic, that there is, you know, that there's, I suppose, a genuine, want to listen to what they have to say. I think that's really, really important. What we'd also see is that where young people feel that they have a safe and supportive environment as well, and where, you know, there are, whether they be educators or youth workers or teachers working with them, that they feel that, again, that they are being supported. So it's all really about that encouraging, you know, encouraging young people, supporting them, giving them that safe space, listening to their voices, hearing what they have to say, and really taking on board. I think the other thing, we have a number of programs, and we will always, particularly with our after school programs, we will build the program, and the first session is generally about, what are you interested in? What do you like to do? What are your needs? So you kind of start it off with that needs-based approach. So, you know, they might say, oh, I'm really interested in fast fashion. You know, I'm really interested in learning more about, and it could be about climate justice. So what you do then is you start weaving, I suppose, your programs based on the interests and based on the needs of young people. I know that can be challenging in a formal setting because you have a particular curriculum that you need to follow. However, there are opportunities to weave those interests and needs into the initiatives. And I think that also is really helpful. The other things that we've seen is where you, I suppose, provide opportunity for young people to develop new skills as well. So we often use within EcoUNESCO, we'd have action projects as a real core kind of a core methodology, I suppose, of working with young people. So we would have a 6 steps framework through our action project work. And that would be all about getting groups together, getting them to communicate with each other, building that team building, learning about the different skills that there is in the team, and then about group work and coming up with a project based on their own ideas, based on their own interests, and then them taking action based on those interests as well. And you always have a supportive adult. I mean, we're not saying that you just kind of, that you can say to young people, yeah, I mean, in some cases you can go and do it and they do amazing work. But a lot of the time you have a supportive adult there. You have a supportive person who basically will guide them and be a coach and be a mentor to them along the way. And we would see that that would work really, really well in terms of building the confidence of young people. And so them taking action builds the confidence. Part of the Six Steps framework we have is that they also have to raise awareness within their peers. And that also builds confidence. That's sort of going out, telling others about the initiatives or the projects that they've done. And then also reflecting on what they've learned as well. And so that's also really important that they stop and reflect.
Can I return the comment to just on the concept of reflection? And on the notion that you know, I love the Six Steps approach that you guys take. But in a sense, what can schools do, perhaps, Marie-José, in your sense? What can an individual school do in a whole school sense that might actually facilitate that sort of learning that is done so well, if you like, in the civil society sector?
Well, going back to schools, I'll start with the school leaders. Namely, in Portugal, the director of the schools or the director of the cluster, because in school we only have associations of schools, so it's not only one school. Because they are really key to have a vision of what they want for their schools. And that is part also of the priorities of the school plan, the school project. And the school leaders are really also important as mediators to the community, how they dialogue with the different stakeholders from the community, not only with the parents and the students within the school, which is really relevant to create this dialogue and also confident, as Elaine said, because if they are not confident, they won't be heard. They won't have space to do that. But also to connect to the other stakeholders. For example, if they want to have partnerships with different stakeholders from the community, they must dialogue with them. And in order to do that, they also need to think, how can we use our curricula and our subjects and our projects within the school to connect with broader issues within the community? For example, to explore visits to the city hall, to the assemblies of the city hall, and other government bodies from the community. But also civil society, because they are too relevant for issues on learning for sustainable. For example, in Portugal, the NGDO are really important within development education, within environmental education. For example, we have different kind of entities that we connect projects with schools and the other public entities within other plans, in national plans and national strategies in Portugal that are also interconnected. The leaders of the schools, the director, are also crucial to create opportunities for teachers to have teamwork, because collaborative work is essential to organize and to plan how to connect different contents from the different subjects to create interdisciplinary work. Because through this interdisciplinary work,
very true,
can open the opportunities not only within the classroom, but other space, and create opportunities for whole school approach to citizenship education.
Super. I'm going to have to draw the line. I mean, I'd love this conversation to go on for a lot, lot longer, but we're on a time clock, and Petra will be throwing us out of the room in a couple of minutes. So, look, can I just thank you both, Marie-José and Alain, for bringing such lovely ideas to us and for bringing such clarity and insight to today's discussion. I suppose what stood out for me particularly was this idea of citizenship is not a standalone subject. It's something that we have to actually live, and that sustainability is integral to that whole experience. And it's particularly powerful when sustainability and citizenship are linked together. It becomes a powerful invitation to young people to explore their roles in shaping the world And when schools and organizations like Eco-UNESCO make space for that kind of dialogue and collaboration and genuine participation, I think participants can only grow. The young people we work with can only grow in knowledge, but also in confidence and purpose. So for those listening to us who wish to hear a little bit more, the Working Group on Schools Learning for Sustainability has a suite of resources that can be accessed quite readily online. We have input papers, we have practical guides, we have online courses, and these are all designed to support schools and civil society organizations on their journey. They can all be accessed on the group's website, and you'll get the details at the end of this program. These podcasts are supported by the European Union Education for Climate Coalition, and we're very grateful for the help we've got from that. If you're interested in hearing more of our podcasts, they're all designed to support schools on that actual journey, you know, but you can actually go, you can find the full suite of podcasts on the Education for Climate Coalition website, and also in time you'll find them on the EU Academy. So my very warm thanks to Maria Jose and to Elena, and also thank you to Petra for her patience and her help in this, and for helping put the episode together. I'm Conor Galvin. So thank you for joining us, listeners, and I hope that you come back and play back the previous conversations that we've had in this fascinating series. Thank you.